Let's do it. It's time for another Colt Schnero Chat Tuesday Night Edition. I'm Jeremy, joined by Robbie. And we've got a lot to address and not a whole lot of time to address it. So let's dive right in, Robbie, with some quick hits. International break. Atletico return to action on Saturday against Sevilla, coming off a couple disappointing results before the break. Let's start by talking about Koke. He's in the Spain starting 11 today against Portugal as Luis Enrique makes a bunch of changes following the Switzerland loss on Saturday. Koke's going to break the games record, Robbie, this coming weekend. He will make appearance number 554. And I want to see if we can do some quick reflections on Koke and his career and whether he is maybe the best player Atletico have ever had as he is set to make a historic appearance this coming weekend.
Yeah, I guess that term best player is not loaded, but it's a complicated one because if you're talking about just purely the very best, you're looking at like maybe someone a little bit more explosive than him, scored more goals. But in terms of importance to the team, in terms of importance at one of the most important teams. Or in one of the most important eras, then definitely, yeah, he's got to be in the conversation. Just given his longevity too, I mean, consideration has to be given to him. And when we talk about the very best players in Atletico history,
the last couple of seasons for him obviously haven't been great, given the issues with the squad balance and the style of play, which we'll get to momentarily, but. Most appearances, most titles, captain for several years, came up through the club's academy, born and bred in Vallecas before joining Atletico's academy at 8 years old. Yeah, if it's not him, the list isn't very long. And I think in terms of pure talent and explosiveness, ability and goals and assists, and Koke's still got 100 assists for Atletico, which is among the top figures in club history. But, you know, he doesn't have Griezmann's goals or Aragonés' goals. Or Torres's goals, but he has been ever present. He's been in all these really solid, sound teams in the last decade. He's been a starter for the very best teams Atletico have had, potentially in club history. So it's an interesting debate to have, and we want to know what you think. Drop us a line on Into the Calderon on our Twitter account or on our Patreon page, patreon.com/ColtSchneroChat, because I think it's a discussion worth having. Koke, I think, is underappreciated for all the records that he has or is going to have by the time he retires. And I'm not sure his game has aged or is going to age particularly well. I think we're starting to see kind of the finish line for Koke, especially at an elite level, but no doubting his importance over the many, many years in this setup under Simeone.
Yeah, and when you say underrated, I mean, I think... Something that we probably don't give enough credit to all players. I mean, making it to this level alone,
sure,
is an amazing feat. I mean, think of the millions of people that play football, and these are the these are the chosen ones. And the dedication, the effort, and then like a guy goes through a poor run of form, and we're like, oh, he's useless, he's no good, get rid of him. And you're looking, going, yeah, but like even the most mediocre players on La Liga clubs are absolutely amazing at what they do. And his longevity definitely needs to be taken into consideration. Just the fact that he stayed at the top for so long under Simeone when he probably had opportunities to leave and things like that. But I also wonder and I fear that this might actually start to happen now a little bit with this Atletico team, is that he might hurt his own legacy by, I mean, it's a difficult one because these guys are so confident that they're never just going to be like, yeah, listen, I'm kind of on the decline now, it's time for me to go. No, they're going to see out their contracts, they're going to take as many contracts as they can get, they're going to try to make as much money as they can working. I mean, a football career is short, so they're not going to just voluntarily stop playing. But I do wonder, like, I mean, what's going to happen with this Atletico team as they start to get a little bit older. I mean, Simeone's loyalty towards his players as well documented, he said it on numerous occasions, once you're in my family, or once you're with me, you're in my family, and that's all that matters to me. And I think there has been times when Simeone probably would have been probably correct to drop Koke, but didn't because of what he offers the team in terms of leadership and the history that they share. But yeah, I just wonder where we're going to go from here in terms of a number of these players and what happens as the era kind of starts to come to an end, you know?
And at some point, they are going to miss the Champions League. At some point, they're going to have a season where they finish fifth. And then I think the dominoes are really going to start to fall. It could happen as soon as, you know, the end of this season. The recent reporting that Miguel Angel Gil wants to sell his shares. He's exploring getting out of the club, which would mean Atletico will be under ownership other than the Gil family for the first time since the 1980s. And that remains to be seen what it means for Simeone, whose contract is up in 2024. Koke's contract is up in 2024. You get the sense these two have been together so long that the captain is very much going to go down with the ship. So we'll see. The start to this season has not been overly encouraging, Robbie. I think you and I agree on that. The losses before the international break in Germany and to Real Madrid in the derby, the very controversial derby for everything that happened off the pitch, which we talked about last week when Danny Segura was on the show. It's not looking great, and part of that is because the squad is still not properly balanced. There was reporting this morning from Ruben Urrea in goal saying that Atletico are aware that the squad has issues, that not everything was addressed properly over the summer, and they will have to go to the market in winter. A report in Marca on Monday said Andre Berta is already looking for a new central defender to sign next summer ahead of the 2023-24 season. I think awareness of the issue is good, Robbie, but the issues actually have to be addressed. And for a couple of seasons now, the club has not shown that they're willing to address these issues to keep Atletico competitive at the very top of the game.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that that's the problem, though, and I don't want to get too deep into this because we haven't actually spoken in a couple of weeks. But
yeah,
as far as I can see it, to me it looks like Simeone is a little bit jaded.
Yeah, there's also that. Yeah,
he doesn't look like the guy who broke onto the scene 6 years ago and egging the team on and stuff like that. Even he looks a little bit tired, and I just wonder, they haven't necessarily bought him the players that he might like. Every manager would always want better players. They're always going to fight their corner in terms of improving their squad. But at the same time, they're not necessarily as bad as a lot of the football we've seen over the last year and nearly a half now.
Mm-hmm.
The Joe Felix thing is just like a spectre haunting the Civitas Metropolitano.
Yeah.
I mean, that just the vibes aren't good. I don't think Diego Simeone is going to just walk out on a contract that's paying him a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of money maybe to get rid of him. They don't want it probably to get nasty in terms of having to fire him and stuff like that because of his status at the club. But for the first time, I actually saw in English, this is Graham Hunter wrote a piece.
Yeah, he did.
Kind of calling out and that was the first time I'd seen it really, like someone saying like this is just not good enough, and because it does feel like there's a kind of a protective cloak around Simeone there a little bit, which is understandable too given his status. And I wouldn't mind, it came after a Real Madrid performance that I didn't actually think was as bad as it. Now the night was stained by the horrible stuff that happened off the field,
yeah,
and some of the stuff that led up to the game, just disgraceful, despicable. So football kind of took a back seat, but I actually didn't think Atletico were that bad.
I agree.
Now having said that, and I've got a column coming out at the end of the week talking about this, Ben, the glass half full part says they weren't that bad, Atletico looked good, all that good stuff. The glass half empty says Real Madrid were realistically only really in second gear. And I feel like they just wanted to get in, get the job done, and get out. And that's what they did. But yeah, overall, I don't think it was actually the worst night watching Atletico at all.
Madrid had a 2-0. They had a 2-0 lead for most of it, and that conditioned how Ancelotti set the team up for the second half. Atletico were able to have possession and were able to go at Madrid or have a go at them. They ended up with 55% of the ball, which is rare for a derby. But and even still, you know, they got a late goal at the end, a consolation, and Madrid were still deserving winners, despite Atletico's not so bad performance, especially in the second half.
No, and it was a moral victory. I'm not saying Atletico deserved to win. They were beaten by a better team, and Real Madrid are a better team than Atletico right now, and there's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah.
They play that game 100 times, and Real Madrid probably win 90 of those games. But I just think in terms of you know what I actually think was the secret? It was Griezmann, basically. He is the best player in that team. And he makes them look different, maybe not as productive as you might like all the time, but he's just so lively, and he kind of gets what is needed, and he's got that kind of change of gear that he can do something like he stung Courtois' palms at one stage in the first half, and it was like, okay, there's a chance of a goal here when he's on the field. Whereas sometimes you watch it with some of the other players on the pitch, and you're like, no, this is just not happening. We could be here for the next 6 hours, and it's not happening. With Griezmann, you always feel like there's a possibility, and I think Simeone just kind of accepted that, and he knows that he has to start him. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with that and the contract and stuff, but yeah, all in all, like, I mean, definitely not the worst performance we've seen from Atletico recently.
I think the Griezmann and Joao Felix situations are worth discussing briefly. Griezmann has probably been their best forward so far this season. I would think Correa also has an argument, but Correa's playing time has been kind of up and down like it was last year. Correa has been really impactful whenever he's been on the pitch, and Simeone needs to find ways to get him on the pitch more frequently. But, you know, Cholo made a big call starting him in the derby, going against the edict from the club saying don't start him until we have this negotiation complete with Barca to reduce the buyout, or not the buyout, to reduce the purchase obligation. Reports have said that they're working on it, that it could end up being around 20 to 25 million, which is probably more in line with Griezmann's market value, given he's in his 30s now. But I thought he played really well in the derby. He had like 80 to 90 touches, a lot of movement between the lines, a lot of activity. Even though most of it went for naught, I thought Griezmann was one of the few players throughout the game, not just in the second half, who could go home feeling pretty good individually about that performance, though the team didn't win. Griezmann he's impressed me so far this season, because I wrote, 4 months ago that he was basically finished and that Atletico needed to return him to Barcelona. But, if he agrees another salary reduction, the club is trying to get him to reduce it further. And if they agree new terms with Barca, then, fine. He will be more than welcome to stay. But I think that right now he is Atletico's best presence between the lines. After the loss in Germany to Leverkusen, Simeone said that when Griezmann's on the pitch, the team plays better. I don't think right now you can say the same for Joao Felix, Robbie, who is staring down an 800-minute goal drought, hasn't scored since April in a win over now relegated Alaves. We're now into the fourth season of the Joao Felix experiment, and geez, how much longer can this go? When will it get to a point where it's either Joao Felix or Simeone? It's one or the other. I think we're getting pretty close to that point now.
I think we are getting pretty close, yeah. And I just wonder, like I said earlier, Simeone to me looks like a guy who's just tired. Maybe he's accepted that he's taken this team as far as it'll go. We've discussed at length about how you motivate new players when they come in. It's not the same as the first group he had with Diego Costa, Felipe Luis, Godin, these guys who had never won anything basically in their life, and all of a sudden they're coming in like, and they're just desperate to win something. Joao Felix came in as a 126 million euro striker, and you've got players that want to play more, and then obviously you've got the thing about teams sitting back against them. So I just wonder, is there a realization here that Simeone has taken his team as far as he can, and We're 4 years in. I mean, I don't think all the blame can be put on at the door of Diego Simeone. I think Joe Felix has to kind of shoulder some of it, but it's just so and this is something he has to fix going forward himself, playing, and I'm sure it will if he was on a team like Manchester City, getting the ball, facing forward, running at players, running at teams, and his teammates moving in order to create space for him, having loads of the ball. He needs that, getting touches in the area. But something that Joao Felix needs, it's so stop-start, it's so frustrating to watch him, because you see him and he gets the ball with his back to goal and he's just waiting for contact. He doesn't even want to carry on with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go down, and I know he's being fouled a lot of the time and there's nothing he can do about it when he actually gets chopped down, but like, there's times when he's just like, I have no other way out here, so I'm just gonna hit the ground here and get it free. And it's frustrating because, like, and I know Messi is just like a different breed, a different animal altogether, but like, you look at Messi, like, he was, all that mattered was the ball and beating the man and moving the ball closer to goal so he could score. And that was all that mattered to him. And he'd be getting kicked, and I know it's hard and you have to kind of protect yourself, and at the end of the day, it's not everyone can take that kind of a kick in and keep playing until they're 35 or 6. But at some point, Joao Felix has to accept that, like, this is kind of part of the game, and if I'm a 126 million euro player, I have to expect a little bit of this, and I have to just keep pushing forward. But yeah, it's very, very frustrating to watch him playing because of all the fouls, which are legitimate, but also because he then looks for contact, because he gets the ball and he tries to turn and there's no one there, and he's swallowed up and then it's gone, and he's only getting 10, 12, 15 to 10 touches in a half. So you're like, this isn't what we thought we were going to get with Joao Felix 4 years in. Now he's 22, and it's just so it's not working, and we can keep lying and denying it and ignoring it and pretending that, oh, this is it and this is it. No, we've too many false dawns, too many long stretches without goals, without assists, and he just doesn't look like a happy player. He's frustrated. It's just not good whatsoever.
Yeah, and he also played hurt in the derby after an early tackle by Danny Carvajal that prompted his exit around the hour mark, and he went straight down the tunnel, which is also not a good look for him. I think there's still some maturity issues to work out. A lot was expected of him at a very young age. He made the move when he was 18. He probably could have waited another year to make that move. But I've said this before, if you wait an extra year to sign him, Manchester City beat you to him, you know. And the fear within the club is that if you sell him now, like, he's going to go to Man City, or he's going to go to Man United or Bayern Munich or wherever and just explode and become the Ballon d'Or candidate he's been tipped to become for years now. And that is the last thing Atletico want. And there is no easy solution. He's too isolated. He plays 40 yards from goal, or too far from where he could do any real damage. He gets fouled 4, 5, 6 times a game. He's had ankle problems in the past. It's frustrating because he's probably the most instinctive and naturally talented and skilled player on this team. And Simeone still can't get the best from him. He can't get the best from himself. We thought he kind of turned a corner the second half of last season, but then he got hurt again, and he still hasn't scored in 5 months. And he's on the bench for Portugal today as they play Spain. Speaking of Spain, this is the last thing I really wanted to talk about today, Robbie. The controversy between the Spanish Federation and Spain's women's team, where 15 of the top female players in the country are refusing to play for the national team. What's the reaction been like in Spain to this story, Robbie? What's the timeline been like, and where are we at now?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I mean, there was a little bit of confusion, I think, at the start, because I think people weren't really sure exactly what was going on. There was obviously reports that the players weren't happy, and this has been going on for a while now, and the players weren't happy, but we weren't sure really why, and they had said that they weren't asking them to be sacked, they were just saying that they weren't happy, and kind of, it was all a little bit up in the air, and then obviously that they what happened, they announced that they wouldn't be playing, and that Spanish Federation said that they wouldn't be picking them. But then it's starting to come to light now in terms of what it was going on there, and it was just kind of basically a control thing with the coach, and I think that it's a little bit of, it's a kind of a strange one, because here in Spain, women's football is huge, and it was huge even before it started getting big in England and other places. It felt like it was huge, not in a way like, oh, we should be supporting this. It's because we want to develop. It was because it was good, and it was a product all on its own, and it was a great like Rayo Vallecano's team was excellent for years, and they had like heroes of women playing in those teams, and it was a big deal. So, but then now there's that side of things, but then at the same time, there's also stories that about Rayo's team, for example, they don't have a physio and things like that,
right.
So it still is, in many ways, still in the dark ages. So I think it was kind of a mixed reaction here, in that it was kind of like, oh, well, what's new? But also, given the status of Spain's women's team, it was like, this can't possibly continue. So I don't know what exactly the solution here is, because the Spanish Federation have dug their heels in and they said, no, you won't be. But then at the same time, what's come to light about the control and management going through the players' bags when they went out shopping, and he had to make sure they were in the room. It's a very kind of a master subject kind of a situation there, which obviously isn't good, given the fact that, firstly, the fact that it's just not good for any team environment to be like that, and lack of trust and stuff like that. But given the fact that that it's a women's team too, and there's a man coming in, kind of almost, I don't know what the word is, like almost an abusive kind of a relationship there, in that not zero trust. And yeah, it's a really strange one, and I don't really know what's going to happen in the long run here.
The Federation has made it clear that they'll select youth players if they're forced to, quote unquote. But yeah, it's a really bad situation, really, in any sport, in any setup. These are things that you don't want to hear. These are things that you don't want to see happen. And I really sympathize and empathize with these 15 players who, you know, took a pretty brave stance here. Lola Gallardo is among them. The Atletico Femenino goalkeeper, the reigning Ballon d'Or winner, Alexia Putellas, is also among them. She missed out on the last Euros through injury. The Federation's made it clear they're not sacking the coach, Jorge Vilda. So, yeah, who's to say where this really goes? I think both sides are really digging their heels in. It was really uncomfortable to hear about and to read about, but I think we have a responsibility to talk about it, because these are issues everywhere, you know, and the women's game, in many aspects, institutional aspects, it's systemic, the reasons why it lags behind the men's game. I mean, the first weekend of the new Liga, Iberdrola is not the sponsor anymore, but the first week of the new league season, the referees went on strike. There were worries that a television deal wasn't going to get worked out. So the issues are systemic, and it's a long-term view to solving them when it really shouldn't. You know, the men's and the women's game should not be this far behind the men's game. You know, we can talk about equality, we can talk about integrity, but when it really comes down to it, we don't see a whole lot of that when the Feminas play, when Spain's women's teams play versus when La Liga teams play, when the Spain's men's team plays. The exposure is different. The finances are different. It's tough, and there's no easy solution either. So I guess we'll wait and see what happens, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean that. But at the same time, I like, I mean, No, and you're right that we do need to talk to it. But women's football has taken a massive leap in the last even year now. But like, and it's and to be honest with you, I prefer, and obviously there was work done by countless women and men, in order to force that issue a little bit at the start. But now it's become its own thing, and like I said, like in Spain, it's not like, oh, this is something we should be doing. It's just like, this is just good football, and I prefer it when it's like that rather than something that we, you know. And I mean, I think it shouldn't even be compared to. And I understand that we're talking about kind of directly comparable things. Obviously, they have to be compared, but I don't even like comparing it, because women's football is its own thing. It's got a great following. It's got a great, some great writers, great reporters, and I personally don't really speak much about it because I don't watch enough of it, and I feel like I just don't want to be bandwagoning on top of something that I don't know enough about. And there's plenty of people who know more than me about.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's in the long run, you'd hope the Spanish women's football team will be fine. And I mean, yeah, the fact that we know their names and they're and we watch so much of the international tournaments gone by and catch whatever La Liga games you do is a massive sign of progress. And I think that I think women's football will be fine regardless of what happens here in Spain with this situation right now.
In the US, the women's team has been better than the men's team like my entire life. For years and years, the women's team has just been battering everybody they play.
And I get that same kind of excitement I do before a massive game when Spain were playing. I do, like, and it's like, and you know a lot of the players, and you know, and it'll take a while for that to fully develop into like what's what. But yeah, like, I mean, it's definitely coming on, and I think the signs are really, really good for the future.
Well, we are going to leave it there for today. This was a pretty impressive show, man. We got through like everything I had in my notes in like 27 minutes. That's solid.
Nice one. I was actually worried. I was eating. I've got a kind of a sore throat, and I was eating, I don't know what you guys call them in America, but they're like caramelos here in Spain. They're sweets, cough.
Like lozenges, cough drops.
Lozenges, cough drops. I was gonna call it cough candy or cough drops. So caramelos, and I was eating caramelos during the show just because so my throat didn't get dry. But and I was wondering also before, like, why do they call them caramelos? They're clearly not caramel, they're mint. And so that's the only thing we didn't cover today as well. I did get to mention it at the end.
Why are they called caramelos? And like, here we have them in all kinds of different flavors, and lozenges, cough drops. Ricola is the big brand, or one of the big brands. But yeah, I got a COVID booster yesterday, and my left arm is just killing me, and in like 24 hours it'll be fine. But like, yeah, and I've got some fatigue and a little bit of a headache, so this is a good place to leave it. We'll put a bookmark here. Robbie, thank you so much for hopping on the show today. I appreciate it as ever.
Absolutely no problem. And coming up to the, after the next international break and coming up to the World Cup, we'll be doing this a lot more often.
I've been
a little bit busy recent weeks, so we'll continue this conversation soon.
Yeah, you know it. On Thursday, I will be back with Alan Feely. We're going to preview the Sevilla Atletico game on Saturday night at the Pizjuan. But in the meantime, thank you all for listening and for your continued support on Into the Calderon, on Spotify, on Patreon. You guys rock. We really appreciate it. And I'll be back soon. Robbie, you and I will be breaking down the Sevilla game at some point as soon as it ends, pretty much, because there are games every 3 days after this. It's going to be crazy for between now and the World Cup. We got to just crack those knuckles and get to work.
You actually cracked your knuckles there.
I did. You caught it. I'm glad.
Yeah, we're real ones here on the Colchonero chat.
But in the meantime, thank you all for listening, and we will be back really before you know it. Thanks again. Adios.